The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Welcome to Beyond, an hour-long program of science fiction, fantasy, and adventure. If you enjoy the program, please drop a line to beyond3x5@gmail.com.
Hasselin by Susan Palwick. Master and mistress didn't take Lossie with them when they left the house to play tennis. She hadn't expected them to, and would have politely declined had they invited her, but she still wished they'd asked. They were gone to their game, and Sherina and Jacob were off on some equally strenuous excursion with friends, and that left Lossie in the house alone. She didn't like being alone. She never had, not since her earliest days at the orphanage. There had been other shapers at the orphanage, of course. She had never really been alone. But so many of them had been sad, unwilling to play or to talk, except to curse the humans, that she had often felt alone. Most of the others had been too sad even to shape. Lossie preferred the humans, the cooks and doctors. They were never unkind, whatever the others like her said. The humans gave her as much food as she wanted and played games with her and praised her cleverness. She had rejoiced when master and mistress took her home from the orphanage, because now she'd always be with humans. Master and mistress had chosen her because she was so clever, because she could speak their language and delighted in their numbers, which she added with ease. And also because the children, who had been just her size then, Sherry's a tall 6 and Jacob's a short 8, mistress had said, had been charmed with her and with the air she shaped for them. Figurines of fat little animals who perched among the furniture, tiny cups perfect for serving tea, bright flower buttons for Sherina's sundress. When Lossie first came, Mistress hadn't been able to get Jacob to do any of his chores, but if Lossie promised to shape a shovel or a ship or a gun for him, he'd do as he was told. That didn't last long. She'd had much more energy then. Now it was difficult for her to shape even a bead or a breadcrumb, no matter how much she ate beforehand. And of course, shaped things couldn't do anything but sit there. The others had told stories in the orphanage, tales about how long ago, before the humans came, the shapers had been able to make things that moved, intricate creations of gears and pulleys. Lossie didn't believe the stories, fantastical fairy tales. She had never seen anyone shape a moving thing. The shapers were just jealous of the humans, who were so much cleverer than they. Shapestone was beautiful, perfectly smooth and lustrous. It couldn't be broken or drilled or reshaped once a shaper had pulled it from the air. This skill had served the shapers well. When they made the old cities, shaped stone by stone over eons, but it had cost them, too, sapped their strength. And there was no need for shaped stone now that the humans had come, with their metal and plastic and glass, all of their wonderful machines. When Lossie first came to the house, Jacob and Sherina had often asked her how she shaped things, but she couldn't explain. It was as natural to her as breathing. One simply imagined the thing and reached with one's thoughts into the surrounding air to find it, and there it would be, glittering and heavy, graceful or lumpish, depending on the skill of the shaper. Some were better at it than others, of course, and for all of them, even the strongest, it was tiring work. Lossie's own gifts were modest. She had only ever made small things, trinkets. "Little things like you," Aska had told Lossie in their own tongue back at the orphanage. "You're just a toy to them." That was after the trial visit, when Lossie had returned in triumph to pack up her few things and leave for good. "They'll tire of you, and then you'll wish you'd stayed." Aska had been Lossie's bunkmate. Every night, Aska cried herself to sleep, remembering the death of her parents And Lossie, who couldn't remember her parents at all, told herself sadly that Aska was just jealous. Aska wasn't clever with sums and would never learn to speak as humans did, and wasn't even very good at shaping, producing only cracked, deformed pebbles. She would never leave the orphanage. That was why Aska said what she did. No one could really wish to stay there. And yet on days like this, when Lossie was left alone, she sometimes worried about the things Aska had said. On days like this, she found herself dreaming about Hasselin, the city in the south, the thriving city of her people who had shaped it over centuries. Mistress had told her about Hasselin. Oh, it's beautiful, Lossie, and had promised that they'd all go there to visit some day when Master and Mistress could make the time. It's a long trip, you see. It's very far away. That's why you came here from the orphanage instead of going there. Lossie had left the orphanage 3 years ago in the summer, when everything was bursting with life and nothing felt impossible. It was autumn now, the season of death, and Sherina and Jacob were far larger than she was. She came barely to Jacob's shoulder and only to Sherry's chin, although she had been alive twice as long as Sherry and was, by her own people's reckoning, fully grown. The children had quickly become bored with Lossie's gift because the toys their parents gave them were much lovelier and more involving. Lately, they had been bored with Lossie, too. No one in the house needed anything Lossie could shape, and so she had left off making things, keeping her energy for her frail body. But that meant that everything she did here was something a human could do better. For all her cleverness with sums, she was slower even at her beloved numbers than she had been when she arrived. Master and Mistress gave her the household accounts, but she knew that was only kindness. They could have handled the accounts much more quickly with one of their machines. More and more, all four of the humans left her alone in the house, as they had today. She forced herself to turn away from the window, to stop staring out at the patchway Master and Mistress had taken to the car. She was alone in the house, and a beautiful house it was, and she should enjoy it. Why, when she had first gotten here, just wandering through the huge, sunlit rooms had made her giddy with happiness. Moping will not endear you to them, she told herself. Her thoughts were, as always, in her own speech. She caught herself wondering where Aska was now, and put the thought aside with a shiver of dread. There had been too many deaths at the orphanage, and Aska had been ill when Lossie left. Overcrowding and bad food, Master and Mistress had said sadly, shaking their heads. No, Lossie answered, puzzled. It wasn't crowded at all. Aska and I had a compartment to ourselves, although it was small, and we always had enough to eat. Why, three humans cooked for everyone there as much as we wanted. You could ask them for food even when it wasn't mealtime, and they'd give it to you. The food was delicious. But everyone had been too sad there. Every night in her sleep, Aska had cried out for her parents, and every morning when she woke, she cried again, I will die here. I will die. Aska had shaped her ugly pebbles and wept. We could make things that moved once. They stole that from us. It was just a story. No shaper had ever made a moving thing, and the humans didn't need shaped stone. They were kind creatures, generous to Lossie, even though they were so much stronger and smarter than she was. They played games with her and stroked her fur and marveled at how easily she had learned human language. Lossie was glad to leave the orphanage, glad when Dr. Gronel praised her own health and strength. She didn't feel strong today. She barely had the energy to go upstairs to her room to lie down for a nap. She had decorated the room with her shape work. A row of funny animals on the windowsill, a vase on the desk. But today, lying on the bed, she turned her head away from the window with its profile of small beasts. She couldn't throw them away. She'd made them, but she hadn't been able to take any pleasure in them since her visit to the art museum. Had that only been last week? She had never been there before, never seen the huge, graceful human sculptures with their sweeping curves and lazily moving parts. Of course, the children no longer wanted her own tiny creations. Why would anyone want them? She remembered how quiet Aska had been at the orphanage when Lossie shaped a curved bowl like a flower and Aska could only make a gritty lump. At the time, Lossie had felt smug, triumphant. Now she felt ashamed. She shouldn't have made Aska feel that way. Where was Aska now? Had she survived? Was she living with humans like Lossie? Or had she made the journey to Hasselin? Stop it, Lossie told herself, trying to shake off her gloom. It was just because it was autumn, the weather turning colder, the trees dying. Autumn always made her sad, and often clumsy, too. Just a year ago, Master and Mistress had taken her to the tennis courts and tried to teach her to play. They gave her one of Sherry's old rackets, but it was still too heavy for her, and she couldn't hit the ball, even after patient coaching from Master and Mistress and their two friends. She had strained and sweated in the crisp, sap-scented afternoon, an afternoon much like this one, missing ball after ball tossed gently at her racket. At last they gave up and began their own game, and Lossie stood on the sidelines and watched them, filled with admiration and regret. Never mind, they told her later. You tried very hard. And that winter, last winter, after the first snowfall, they took her skiing with them. It was a special treat, because the children were visiting their grandparents and didn't need Lossie's care. Master and Mistress took her all the way to the wilderness, which lay beyond the northern ruins, 3 hours from the human city. She didn't like the ruins because her people had once lived there, Aska's parents and maybe her own, too. But she knew the humans were as sad about this city's death as she was. There was an epidemic, Dr. Gronel had told her soberly. We tried to help them, but far too many died anyway. Lossie nodded, remembering stories from the orphanage, terrifying tales of the tall humans moving among the dead and dying. Aska and many of the others thought the humans had caused the sickness, willed it. Lossie knew this could not be true. The humans had been there to help, as they had always did. But the ruins still made her sad. Before Master and Mistress took her skiing, they had asked her if she wanted them to skirt around the empty, silent city. The shaped stone towers that must have taken so long to build were empty now, the streets deserted. These ruins did not even have a name. Of course not, she said bravely. That would make the trip much too long. I'll just keep my eyes closed while we drive through it. And she did, and the forest was worth everything. The clean white powder and the silence of the trees awed her. She could have stood still and looked at the tracery of black branches against gray sky forever, but she couldn't match Master and Mistress's effortless gliding. They sped past her again and again, chasing each other, laughing while she slipped and struggled and fell. At last, Master picked her up and carried her, covered with snow and chilled to the bone, to the back seat of the hover car. She shivered all the way home, despite the two dense, scratchy blankets Mistress piled on top of her. Plucky little thing, Mistress said. There, we went too fast for you, didn't we? I'm so sorry. You'll be all right once we get home. But Lossie hadn't been all right. She'd taken to bed with aches and a fever, feeling far too wretched to do any cleaning or read to children, too weak to shape even a grain of sand. Sherina had brought her candy. She was too queasy to eat. And Mistress, kind Mistress, had spent hours by her bedside stroking her thinning fur. That was when she told Lossie about Hasselin. There are thousands of your people there, Lossie, all strong and happy. And warm, Lossie said, wondering why no one at the orphanage had ever mentioned this place. And yet when she closed her eyes, it seemed to her that she could see the city, full of trees and flowers, and feel the fragrant breeze. There must be a river there, and many birds. "And warm," Mistress answered, tucking the blanket more tightly under Losi's chin. Losi could tell from her voice that she was smiling. "We'll take you there when you're older, so that you can choose a mate and start your own family." Losi, in her weakened state, began to cry, obscurely afraid. "I want to stay with this family. I want to stay with you and Master and Sharina and Jacob." "Shh, love, and so you will, as long as you wish." The day after that, Dr. Gronel had come, but he had no medicine to offer for Losi's fever. "A virus," he said, gently stroking her forehead with his cool, massive hand. And Losi grew afraid, remembering Aska's illness. "Is it, you said, an epidemic?" "No, no, don't be afraid. This is like a cold in humans, but a little worse. Just stay in bed until you're all better, Losi. Drink warm things and eat nourishing foods, and don't pretend to be stronger than you are. Why in the name of heaven did they take you skiing with them?" "To show me how beautiful the forest is," she said, and Dr. Gronel smiled. "Yes," he said, "this is a lovely world, isn't it? But many things are beautiful. You should protect yourself from the ones that make you sick." Afterwards, she heard him speaking sharply to Master and Mistress in the other room, although she couldn't make out most of the words. She stayed in bed as he had asked and gradually grew strong enough to move about again, although it took many more long, weary weeks stretching into months as winter mellowed into spring, which ripened in its turn into summer. They had all been so careful of her through that time, although Jacob pouted because she got more treats than he did. "It's not fair," he said. "You're not even a person." And Mistress overheard him and flew into one of her rare rages, telling Jacob he would never have any treats again. And Master spanked him, while Jacob howled, and Sharina told him he was a little monster. And Jacob, looking miserable, brought her treats every day after that, although Losi tried to lighten his burden by teaching him games with beads and string, because she had no energy for shaping. He played the games dutifully, but she knew he'd rather have been outside. He was just a child, she told herself. The children of her own people could be cruel, too. She had been cruel to Aska when they were both children, and Jacob's remorse was real. Yet they had all been kind during her illness, but Dr. Gronel must have forbidden sports because one afternoon last week, when the children were off playing with friends, Mistress had taken Losi to the art museum. "I thought you'd like it," she said, "because you make things of your own." Losi loved it. In high, airy rooms filled with warmth and light, she ran from canvas to canvas, sculpture to sculpture, overwhelmed with color and shape and texture. Never had she felt so alive, not even before her illness. "Look," she said, tucking at Mistress's woven sleeve with long, thin fingers. "Look at this painting. See how they arrange those circles over there? See, that's the sun shedding heat. And those shapes, why, they must be birds. Look how they're flying away from the world. And that statue, see? That's the flock of birds huddled in the cold, even though it's not by the same artist." "Really?" Mistress asked, smiling. "Do you see all that?" "Well, I'm afraid it just looks like blobs of paint and stone to me. But I'm not very smart about these things. I'll just sit on this bench over here, Losi. You look as long as you like." Losi looked for hours. At first, she kept running back to the bench to try to tell Mistress about the wonderful things she had discovered. But Mistress, with her bag of sweets and her miniature television, was engrossed in the antics of bright moving figures no larger than gnats. "In the next room," Losi said, "there's a sculpture of the ship on the ocean, and the waves, oh, such curves as you've never seen, better than life because they're frozen and you can study them. You can almost feel the spray. Do come see, Mistress." But Mistress frowned slightly from under her headset. "It's all right, Losi. I've seen the ocean. Maybe we'll take you there next summer when we go to the city in the south. Go on. Look at things. I'm fine." After a while, Losi stopped trying to share what she had found and simply made her way from gallery to gallery, floor to floor, torn by the conflicting urges to stare at each piece as long as possible and to hurry, hurry, so she wouldn't miss whatever marvels were in the next room. She saw a bright metal mobile, as wide as the space which contained it, shifting slowly in sunlight. She saw elaborate models of buildings, an entire car polished bright as a jewel, carved wooden furniture as intricate and fragile as snowflakes. She saw ornate costumes Sherina would have loved. Everything she saw elated her, but the sculpture filled her with a longing so intense it became pain. Needing air, she stumbled through an open door into a walled garden and found herself surrounded by yet more sculpture-shaped stone, her own stuff, but these made her work look as clumsy as Aska's. That graceful, gleaming tracery could be the branches of the forest, but those thin, elongated crystal trees grew nowhere Lossie had ever grown. Here was a small-scaled animal with large eyes. Here was a series of domestic tableaux, a bowl of greenish fruit, a rumpled bed with a towel hanging from the end, shoes and sweaters scattered on a closet floor. Lossie blinked, frightened. The household sculptures made her feel the same stab of grief she'd endured as she tried to swing the tennis racket, as she struggled on unwieldy skis through the forest and watched master and mistress flying past her. Looking up at the bowl of fruit, she realized she felt that same grief whenever she had to stand on a chair to chop food at the kitchen table or wash dishes, or reached the vase on the sideboard to arrange the black irises she had gathered from the garden. These statues had been shaped by someone small like she was. Well, of course, all her people were small. But this work, unlike the scaled animal, was about living in the human world, where things were too big. The bowl of fruit sat on a table far taller than the artist, and Lossie marveled at the energy it had taken to shape such a towering thing. The shoes were huge and misshapen. The bed was larger than anyone could ever make properly, and it had just been left that way, rumpled, uncared for, the way Jacob and Sherina always left things, almost as if they were taunting Lossie by making her wrestle with objects which they, even though they were not yet fully grown, could have handled much more easily. No, Lossie bit her lip, tasting sweet salt, and covered her eyes with her hands. Sherina and Jacob were good children, despite their moments of thoughtlessness, and she enjoyed caring for them. She liked to cook and didn't mind cleaning, and she enjoyed the elegant order of the numbers in the accounts, and didn't master and mistress always protest that she was doing too much? Hadn't they cared for her all these months when she was sick? And didn't she owe them something for taking her home from the orphanage when too many people died, where everyone was so sad, where even Aska, her friend, spoke only bitterness? Master and mistress had given her a private bedroom and let her share their meals and tried to teach her tennis. How else could she repay them for their kindness? She wasn't a fit partner in their games. As much as she longed to become golden and tall like they were, she would always be short and weak, her pale fur drab, patchy. But she could help with the things she was good at, with sums and chores and reading to the children. Even if she could no longer shape things that interested them, even if she would never be able to shape sculptures like these, which must have taken strength and concentration, she could barely even imagine. Still, she had a place. "We all have different abilities," Master had told her once, as he unscrewed the lid of a jar which had defeated her. She clung to those words as she turned away from the statues. She wouldn't look at them again. They were evil, ugly things, despite their skill. Little wonder so few people sought them out. She couldn't imagine why they were in the museum at all. A yellow-suited guard looked out into the garden from the door. 15 minutes to closing, he said. Lossie nodded and tried to speak, but her throat felt as if it had been sewn shut. How long has she been here? Mistress must be furious. Do you like them? The guard asked, nodding at the sculptures. Lossie didn't want to talk to him, but he was blocking the way back in. Me? I think Arantxa is better than Mirna or Benaran, but that's an unpopular view. Most people like the nature studies better than the household scenes. He laughed. You know, cute animals and trees, but even Mirna and Benaran are awfully good. I don't think any of them have gotten the attention they deserve. He smiled at her. She wanted to ask him to move, but she didn't know how. He was so tall, with a smooth tan, just like masters and mistresses. He must ski and play tennis all the time when he wasn't at the museum. And he worked here. He belonged here. He knew so much about the art, more than she did, although her own people had made it. Shame swamped her. She had to talk to him. He was waiting for her to say something. And Mistress was waiting for her on the bench. They're very well done, she said, but there's no grace to them. They're too real. It was a stupid thing to say. Now the guard knew that Lossie wasn't clever at all. He'd wonder why anyone had brought her home from the orphanage. Surely he would let her go now, get her out of the way. But instead, he nodded as if she'd said something intelligent. You must prefer the abstracts, then. Many people find the representational school tiresome. He paused then and added shyly, Do you shape? His voice had grown different, almost deferential. But no, she must be imagining that. All she could really hear was the pounding of her pulse. Not like these, she said. Never like these. She realized that she both longed for the skill of these shapers and was disgusted by how it had been used. She swallowed, desperate to go home and busy herself with the account books, with the sweet oblivion of numbers which never lied and never caused her pain. Little things, she told the guard, tiny shapes in my spare time when I'm not working, silly animals, egg cups, please, will you excuse me? It's very late and someone's waiting for me. I'm sorry I kept you, he said, suddenly sounding confused and very young. As young as Jacob or Sharina when they had bad dreams. And she ran past him, past the shaped stone monstrosities, back inside, and through airy rooms filled with light and paintings of the sun, down stairways hung with banners, until at last she reached the bench, where Mistress was waiting, scanning the other patrons, her bag packed and slung over her arm. I'm sorry, Lossie said, fighting for breath. I lost track of the time until a guard reminded me. How long have I made you sit here? It's all right, Mistress said. Really, it is, Lossie. It's just that the children are at school waiting to be driven to their dance lessons. Oh, Lossie said, I'm so sorry. She'd completely forgotten that the children had their lessons today. There was a place with some statues which disturbed me terribly, and it took me the longest time to figure out why. And then the guard, I'm sorry you didn't like it, Mistress said with a sigh, and Lossie began to tremble. But I did, she said as they hurried out of the museum. I did like it. I loved it. There was just the one room. Everything else was so beautiful, Mistress. It moved me more than I can tell you, and it was so kind of you to bring me. I hope I can come back. May I come with the children sometime? I think they'd be bored, Mistress said. They aren't old enough for museums. Do you think so? I saw plenty of children there, younger than Sharina and Jacob. Yes, and misbehaving too, most of them. Children need activity. I hope Sherry and Jake won't be late for their lessons. They were late and cranky about it. Jacob in the front seat with his mother fretted that he wouldn't get the recital part of the Soldier Boy if he didn't arrive in time. You and your stupid tennis games, he said. You're always late. Never mind, Mistress said firmly. Lossie and I were at the art museum and she had a wonderful time. She deserves to enjoy herself once in a while too, you know. She enjoys herself all the time. That's all she does. She lies in bed and plays baby games with beads and string. Jacob, Mistress said, Lossie works very hard. You lie in bed, too, when you're sick. Now stop it. You can't always expect everyone to do your bidding. The games had been for Jacob. Sitting in the back seat next to Sharina, Lossie suddenly felt as if she were standing in front of the Arantxa shapework again, feeling bitter and used and insignificant. Mistress is defending you, she told herself. She didn't have to take you there at all. And Jacob is mean to his sister and his parents, too, when he doesn't get his way. Lossie, Sherina asked, touching her arm. What did you see at the museum?
Wonderful things, Lossie answered quietly. Dear sweet Shari, paintings of the sea and portraits of the most beautiful people in the world and statues shaped from stone as polished as glass and costumes. Shari, gorgeous dresses and capes.
Jacob turned and made a face. It sounds boring.
They had a car, too, Jacob.
Why did she always struggle to mollify him?
You're just a toy, Aska said in her head, and she went on hating herself.
And drawings and models of buildings like the ones you make.
Grown-ups make crayon buildings.
Jacob sounded incredulous.
Grown-ups design buildings, Mistress said. They draw them on paper, and sometimes they make models to give people a better idea of what the building will look like. But you need training to do that. You need to be good at math. How did your math test go, Jacob?
It went fine, he sounded sullen. He hated sums.
Refused to sit still through Lossie's efforts to coach him.
Can I make some buildings for the museum?
Maybe when you're grown up, Mistress said. If you're very, very good at making buildings then. But it's a very serious place, Jacob, and it's not for children.
If you wanted to look at the buildings in the car for a little while, we could go there and then leave if you didn't like the rest, Lossie said.
Sherina could look at the costumes. I saw other children there. Would you like to go sometime?
But no one answered, because they'd reached the dance school, and Sherina and Jacob piled out of the car. Jacob didn't get his soldier boy part, but Sherina won an even better role as the brave mother mouse who saves her hungry family by stirring and stirring the cat's milk until it turns to cheese. All the talk at dinner that evening was of the recital, of fittings and rehearsals and opening night. Lossie offered warm congratulations, but no one wanted to hear about the art museum. Master, Mistress, and Sherina kept bubbling about the dancing mouse, and Jacob kept sulking. Once he leaned over to Lossie while the others were talking and hissed at her. It's your fault. I'd have been the soldier boy if I'd gotten there on time.
It would do no good to remind him that Sherina practiced far more faithfully than he did and had been just as late for the lesson.
Try to be happy for your sister, Lossie said.
What? Mistress said. Lossie, what did Jake just say to you?
He didn't say anything, Lossie said. She got up, trying not to think of the towering, sharp stone closet, and lugged the dishes to the kitchen before going to her room. The first thing she saw was her little animals lined up on the windowsill. She balled her fists to keep from knocking them to the floor. They wouldn't shatter as they ought. They'd only make noise and disturb the humans. Cute animals, the guard had said with a laugh. Cute animals were small and easily frightened. They could be dismissed. They threatened no one and meant nothing.
Lossie heard laughter from the dining room, quick snatches of conversation. If she rested for a week and ate as much as her stomach could hold, would she have the strength to shape something like one of the sculptures she'd seen today? Something huge and towering? Something that would show the humans what it felt like to be small? Would they be proud of her then? Would the dinner chatter about her be about her accomplishment? Would everyone crowd around her lovingly, or only desert her in discomfort, as the garden with the sculptures had been deserted?
Silliness, she told herself. She was pouting like Jacob, resentful at not getting enough attention.
And yet she found herself wondering yet again where Aska was now, Aska and all the others. When was the last time Lossie had seen another shaper? In the orphanage, she had preferred the company of humans who called her clever and didn't cry about what they had lost. She hadn't wanted to be sad in the orphanage. Since then, she seemed to have grown sad anyway.
Because it's autumn, she scolded herself now, in the silent house and her silent room, airy and vast with white curtains and a large soft bed and a large closet, because you can't play tennis. Her closet was as large as the shapestone one, but far neater. Her things took almost no room at all. She'd rest and eat. She'd shape something serious, something beautiful to soothe herself with. Perhaps if she took her shaping as seriously as Master and Mistress took their sports, as the children took their recitals, she'd be better at it. But she couldn't shape anything today,
not even a speck of sand. She started as she always did, closing her eyes and relaxing, extending her mind to embrace the air around her and the elements within it. She could feel them there, heavy and gleaming, insubstantial as yet, waiting to be gathered and given form. But when she reached for them, they eluded her grasp like glittering fish in a pond, slipping away from her, and soon she felt herself slipping too, losing her sense of what surrounded her, everything solid fading into mist. She stopped trying to shape. She opened her eyes and stared out the window instead and found herself dreaming again of Haslin. Mistress spoke of it so often, but no one else ever did. There was an atlas in one of the bookcases on the landing, just outside Lossie's room. Mistress had never shown her Haslin on a map. If Lossie looked now, would she find it? It would be so easy to look. And yet she discovered suddenly with a tightening of her heart that she did not want to. What was this? Surely Mistress would not lie to her. Back downstairs, she decided, giving herself a shake. Back down to the books, to the numbers, always comforting in their order. With a sigh of relief, she turned toward the door and then heard laughter higher pitched than Master's and Mistress's on the path outside. The children were back, although she'd expected them to be gone all day. But here they were, and returning to her window, and she saw two friends, a brother and sister, and the friend's mother with them, too. Lossie, obscurely ashamed, hurried out to greet Sherina and Jacob and the guests. The four children tumbled into the house in a confusion of voices and stray leaves and toys. Sherina had a yo-yo and Jacob had a hoop. Their friends' names buzzed past. Lossie, in a blur, she tried to greet the mother properly, but Jacob was tugging on her hand. "We aren't home for long," he said. "We came to get you, Lossie. We're going to..." "I'll stay home with you," Sherina said. "I bought some clay home from school. Will you teach me to shape it, Lossie?" Shari and Jake's friends were running up and down the stairs. Lossie looked helplessly at the mother, who was flipping through a clothing magazine she'd found on the hall table. But it wasn't her place to tell this woman how to discipline her children, and Jacob was still plucking at her. "Lossie, we're going to..." Sherina pulled at Lossie's other hand. "Teach me to shape things, Lossie. I want to make animals like you do." "We're going to the science museum," Jacob shouted, his eyes gleaming. "We'll take you with us." "The children thought you might like it," the mother said, looking up from her magazine for a moment. "They insisted we swing by and pick you up." "Jacob insisted," Cherry yelled, "and he's wrong. It's the art museum she likes, Jacob. You know that. Lossie, I'll go with you to the art museum." "But what's this other one?" Lossie asked, puzzled and flattered. Jacob so rarely thought to include her in his interests, especially when he was busy with his friends. Maybe he'd forgotten over his anger. Maybe he'd gotten over his anger about the recital. Finally, and this was his way of telling her he was sorry, "I'd like to see this other museum, too." "You'll hate it," Sherina said, sounding very certain and very much like her mother. "I hate it. It doesn't have anything interesting at all. It's boring, Lossie. Please let me stay here with you." "I'd like to see Jacob's museum," Lossie said. "And you can't stay here by yourself, Sherina. Children, won't you be tired if you keep doing that?" The young guests were sliding down the banister now. "I don't want to go there," said Sherina, who was normally such a tractable child. "I want to look at the art." "We can look at art another day," Lossie said firmly, and Jacob treated her to the sweetest smile she'd seen in months. "But Lossie, you won't like it. I know you won't." "Come on," Jacob shouted. "Let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go." And then he and the other two children were out the door, and the mother had put down the magazine with a sigh to follow them. Lossie set off after them. "Come on, Shari. We'll find something at the Science Museum you'll like, I promise." In the car, Lossie sat on Sherry's lap and tried to find out why the girl was so upset. Every time she asked, though, Jacob cut in and said, "Because she's a baby, that's why." "I'm not the baby. You are." "Lossie, stop fighting," Lossie said. The other two children were fighting, too, over some toy. Their mother, wearing a headset, didn't seem to hear anything. "Shari, isn't there anything in the Science Museum you like?" "The minerals," Sherina said immediately. "They're jewels, Lossie. They're so pretty, they sparkle so. They're too expensive for anyone to buy, but if you want to look at them, you could shape statues of them for me, just little ones, and then I'd feel like I owned some. Well, then, we'll go see them. Do you feel better now? Maybe. Can we look at the minerals first? No fair, Jacob said. You're always first. I want to be first. We'll go through the museum in order, Losi said, and that way we'll see everything, if that's all right with your friends. But the other children were still squabbling and the mother was still listening to music. This museum contained microscopes and meteorites, telescopes and topsoil, bodies and bones and beetles. Very little of it was beautiful. But all of it was interesting and impressive, and Lossie felt honored to be there, as if at last she was being allowed to share important things, the things that determined the way the world worked, the same things the children studied so assiduously at school. She had heard Jacob talk about atoms, and here was a model of one, silver tubes with red and blue balls on the ends. Here were photographs of the stars and the surface of the moons and the other planets where humans lived. Here was a film of a red wrinkled baby being born. Here was a diagram explaining the physics of tennis balls. In truth, she appeared to be far more interested in the exhibits than anyone else. Jacob kept racing ahead, and Sherina kept trying to pull her back, and the other children and their mother had vanished somewhere. Lossie supposed they would all find each other again at the entrance. For now, her job was to keep track of Sherry and Jake. She had already begun to grow tired when they turned a corner and found themselves in a hallway with rooms to either side, left or right. The minerals are that way, Sherry said, pointing left. Lossie, they're so pretty. You only want pretty things, Jacob called scornfully over his shoulder. He was already heading right. I want to look at the ancient animals. No, Jacob, we've been doing what you want all day. I want to see the minerals. She knows what rocks look like, Jacob said. The ancient animals are much more interesting. Lossie, come on. You're mean, Sherina said. Mean. Lossie, he's horrible. Don't go with him. We have to stay together, Lossie said. What are the ancient animals? Monsters, said Sherina. They're, oh, Shari, they are not monsters. They're animals that lived a long time ago. You like them, Lossie. No, she wouldn't. She wouldn't, Jacob. I'll tell Mother. We can see both, Lossie said. There's still plenty of time until closing. Sherina, are you scared of these things? Here, hold my hand. If they're dead, they can't hurt you. Yes, they can, Lossie. Please don't go there. Why, child, what can they do to us? Make us sad, Sherina said. Make us sad because they're dead. Cry baby, Jacob called in glee. Cry baby, misty, moisty, mother mouse. That's all you are. Well, I'm going. And he ran off. And because Lossie couldn't let him wander by himself, what would master and mistress say if something happened to him? She set off in pursuit, Sherina dragging at her hand. Shari, stop, Lossie said and shook herself free. She spotted Jacob in front of a huge skeleton of some sea creature, but when he saw her, he ran off again. He paused in front of a model of an odd-furred animal with webbed feet and a single twisting horn, but was on his way before Lossie reached him. Let him go, Sherina said, crying behind her. Just wait here. Don't follow him anymore, Lossie. It's a game. I can't let him get lost, Shari. He won't. Come on, he can't have gone much further. That's the end of the exhibit up there. They found him standing triumphantly in a small corridor, hung with photographs. Odd, Lossie thought wearily. He didn't usually like pictures. Well, it was a game to torment his sister. Come on, Jacob, we're going home. All right, he said, smiling now. Sherina, whimpering, tugged at Lossie's hand. Hot and tired, Lossie glanced incuriously up at the photographs, which were scaled, like everything here, for tall people. Don't look, Sherina said, but it was too late. Lossie blinked at the photograph in front of her. A city, a shaper city. It had to be, because there were the shapers. They stood in ranks, wearing strange helmets. They looked out from walls and parapets, while odd things with gears and wings flew through the air toward a phalanx of humans holding guns. She shook her head. What was this? Shaper Defense, the placard read. The shapestone weapons seen here are typical of the ones used to repel human incursions into Shaper territory after the first landing. What? Sherry was saying something, but the words faded into a blur, mere noise. Lossie bent over a diagram of one of the weapons in the photograph. It was a lethal thing, all cogs and needles. The placard said that the cogs turned to drive the engine. It said the needles had burrowed into human flesh, twisting, moving parts. Lossie blinked again, shook her head, turned to the next photograph. Shapers lying on cots, tall humans moving among them. She knew this image. It was a tale from the orphanage. The horror story Ask and the others had told at night. She had begun to shiver. The room shook around her. She was surprised she could still read the placard. The virus intended to suppress the shaping ability only blunted it, while also producing epidemic and disastrous illness. Shari was crying. Lossie couldn't make herself turn to comfort the girl. Instead, as the room danced around her, she looked at the last photograph, a group of thin, pale figures with patchy fur. Tragedy, said the caption underneath, and nearing extinction and gifted race, and then a list of names. Tekiban, Alagia, Mirana, Aranche, Haranche. Jacob was giggling, but it was the nervous giggle of a child who's done something horrible. Do you shape? The guard at the art museum had asked. He must have thought she knew. Mother and father said we'd have to tell you sometime. Jacob looked down at his shoes. He'd stopped giggling. They said you'd have to know. They did. Not like this, Sherina said. Not so soon. Oh, Jacob. Because of a dance recital, Lossie thought. Because of a toy soldier. Never mind, she said, and fought to stay upright. Dr. Granel had told her about the epidemic, but not that the infection was deliberate, a weapon. Never mind, Shari. We need to find your friends. We need to tell their mother that I want to go home now. But when she tried to walk, the floor swung and swooped, and her limbs became as unresponsive to her will as they had been on the tennis court, and all the pictures faded to black. When she woke up, fighting her way out of a long tunnel, she was in her soft bed, and Dr. Granel was leaning over her. I'm sorry, he said. Oh, Lossie, that dreadful little boy. I'm so sorry. She shook her head. Her throat ached. He showed me the truth. It was the truth, wasn't it? Dr. Granel looked away. Yes, he said. I'm sorry. Of course it had been the truth. That was why Sherina had been so upset. Aska and all the others at the orphanage had told the truth, too. And Lossie wondered now how they had known. Tales passed down in the dark, it must have been. And how Aska must have felt watching her go off with the humans. They are killing us. They will die here. We will die here. Grief stabbed her. Was Aska dead now? How many of us are left? He bowed his head. Not enough, Lossie. We're doing everything we can to help. We're preserving DNA. We're trying to clone some of you. There are breeding programs. If you get stronger, maybe. He looked away and said, the virus wasn't supposed to hurt you. It was just supposed to stop the shaping so you wouldn't hurt us. With our moving weapons, she said, because you came here and weren't wanted, but you took what you wanted, didn't you? Our planet. Our cities. Us. He turned back to face her. He looked ashamed, like Jacob when he'd been scolded. Lossie went on merciless. You tried to take away what made us ourselves. You tried to make us like you, creatures who couldn't shape. But we weren't like you because we were smaller and weaker and not as smart with metal and plastic. And that was even better, wasn't it? Some of you are immune, Dr. Granel said. In all of you, the shaping was blunted, but some of you are immune from the other effects. In some of you, the virus doesn't progress. She remembered the needles. Am I immune? She saw him swallow. We thought you were, Lossie. Until I got sick, she said. Until I stayed sick last winter. Yes, I told them to tell you. She closed her eyes and saw flowers. Mistress told me there was a city in the south, a thriving city of my people. Hasselin, she called it. She promised they'd take me there. She said I could find a mate and start a family, but there isn't any city, is there? Or if there was, it's gone, ruins like the one in the north. No city, he said quietly, sadly. And even if there were, it wouldn't have helped moving you somewhere else, not medically and not socially. You'd lost your family when you were so young, and you'd always been close to humans. Yes, she said, opening her eyes. She remembered swinging the tennis racket with aching arms, remembered slipping and sliding on cold skis. I've spent my life trying to be something I'm not. How long, Dr. Gronel? For you? I don't know. Years, maybe? Maybe less than that? Why did you allow me to live here at all? Why didn't you keep me in a lab to protect me if my DNA's so precious? That would have been cruel, he said, sounding pained. The adoptive families were screened very carefully. We wanted you to be happy. Happy, she said, and saw him flinch. She heard him take a breath. Everyone who knew Aranche says he was very bitter before he died. His voice was as hesitant as Lossie had ever heard it. Well, of course he was, but that's a kind of strength. I think you have to learn to hate us, Lossie, if you don't already. Did she? She didn't know. She had chosen humans when she was very young, had tried to become one of them, had mourned her failure. Could she hate them without hating herself? And if she hated them, who was left to love? Even Aska had faded to a vague blur, the laughing cook's face is much clearer. I'm sorry, Dr. Gronel said. He rubbed his eyes and stood up. I have to go now. Rest and eat well. Shari called her parents. They're coming home. The other family will stay until they arrive. You can call if you have any questions, Lossie. Any time. Thank you, she said out of habit, and he left. Lossie lay in bed listening to the birdsong outside, to breezes stirring through the house. She could hear the children playing in the garden as boisterous as ever. Once Sharina crept into the room, but when Lossie pretended to be asleep, the girl went away. Where were master and mistress? At last Lossie got up and walked unsteadily to the windowsill, where her tiny shaped animals sat in a neat row. Never had they looked uglier to her. She thought of Aranchi's vast shapings, the closet and the bed, how much energy they must have taken. Had he already been sick when he made them? Dusk was falling. The children's thin voices rang through the house. They were playing a counting game, and Lossie realized that she had no more use for numbers, which went on forever. She stood without moving until she heard master and mistress coming up the walk. When she looked out her window, she saw them, dressed in the absurdly stylized costumes of the game, clutching their rackets and hurrying toward the house. They had their future. It played with circles and infinities, with hoops and sticks, and was cruel to anyone who kept it from its desires. The shapers had defended themselves with weapons, and so the humans had used weapons of their own, tiny ones, living and lethal. But remembering how she had felt in the art museum, Lossie knew that art, too, could be a weapon. It could tell stories. It could make people feel pain and guilt and sorrow. She closed her eyes, reaching. What would she shape if she could? What large thing would she make? Haslin, the city mistress had invented, or anyway part of it, a model of it. Lossie would make it real. She would reach into the air and find her city, a shaper city, with her kind laughing and playing, planting flowers and tending their young. She would shape the city that had never existed, that could never exist. She would shape a city without humans, a city with no need of weapons. She did not have the strength, of course. She would never be able to finish it. How would she even begin? But she did begin, finding what she needed in the air, gathering it, depleting herself. She began to shape walls and towers, block by block, and as she did, she imagined the crowds she would shape, too, the tiny figures. She would shape gardens and markets and vast outdoor galleries, all of them thronged with her kind, old people and young couples, families with children. She would shape them vibrant and smiling, leaving peacefully in a place where everything was the right size for them. She kept at her work through dinner, through Jacob's punishment by his parents, through master and mistress's attempts to talk and confess and apologize and explain. She had no time for interruptions and no sympathy for excuses. Her muscles trembled with her effort, and mistress backed out of the room and returned with bowls of food. Lossie opened her eyes only to devour the stuff before going back into her shape trance. She stood surrounded by a low-growing wall of shape stone, and whenever she stopped shaking with exhaustion, she forced herself to rally. This is for Aska, she told herself, and reaching again and again, into the shining air.